Gollum, action!
Roger.
Haven't you heard of suspension of disbelief?
Welcome one and all to the Sequel Bait Podcast. I am Robert.
And I'm Richard. And this is a podcast where we each pitch a potential sequel to a pre-existing movie and then attempt to improve one another's movie with some out-of-touch producer's notes.
And by improve, we mean sometimes totally derail or make more absurd.
Yeah. I would say that that's sometimes an improvement.
Yeah, actually, you make a good point. So for this episode, we are taking on, it's quite a Herculean effort, but we are pitching sequels for The Shawshank Redemption. The 1994 film directed by Frank Darabont and based on a Stephen King short story of the same name, currently ranked on number one on IMDb at a 9.3, which
yeah.
is pretty insane, just above the Godfather movies. Yeah.
Well, shall we get started?
Oh, yes. I will go ahead and begin with my pitch.
Excellent.
So I had a lot of different ideas of how one could do a sequel for Shawshank Redemption because it's no easy task. And I decided to pivot a little bit and set it in the year 2018. So current year.
Interesting. Yeah.
So just over 50 years have passed since Red was paroled from Shawshank, and since then, the prison has actually closed down and just sits there dormantly.
Okay, makes sense.
And we're opening with a new character. His name is Jack. And we find him at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting where he reveals that he is a writer who, due to his alcohol addiction, hasn't been able to write anything.
Okay.
See, I'm working in Stephen King
right.
tropes right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
And outside the meeting, he's talking to his sponsor and he says, you know, this is great, I'm clean, but I haven't been able to write anything good still. And his sponsor suggests, well, why don't you go to the local library here in Maine?
Yeah.
We see that Jack is, you know, flipping through newspaper stories on microfilm. He's trying to look for inspiration, and he comes across the following headline from the 60s, Corruption and Murder at Shawshank.
Yeah, the newspaper.
Yeah, this is the very story that Andy Dufresne broke mm-hmm. to the papers and brought down the warden. So Jack begins reading, and we start seeing him pull book after book on the subject of Shawshank. That is really hard to say. Shawshank Prison.
Okay.
Reading everything and anything about the subject. Jack calls his sponsor, and he's like, okay, you're right. I found my story. So we cut to Jack driving on a dusty road, and he's following instructions on his phone, but through the trees, the ominous towers of Shawshank Prison looms ahead. And Jack okay. pulls up and gets out, and he meets this very elderly man who is the caretaker, and his name is Haywood. Now, this is
yeah.
not the... It's not clear if it's the same Haywood from the first movie.
Sure.
But just keep that in mind.
Okay.
So he leads Jack inside and gives him a big tour of the prison. The place is totally empty, but it's kind of strangely not in the worst of conditions. And they end their tour in the warden's office, and Haywood asks Jack... do you have enough to get started on your writing? And Jack says, well, actually, I did want to say this over the phone, but I plan to stay in the prison overnight for inspiration.
Okay.
And Haywood says, okay, that's fine by me, but I won't be here until next week. So feel free to stay as long as you like. Just don't fuck anything up and lock the door behind you when you leave.
Yeah.
Any problems here are totally on you.
Sure.
So that evening, Jack wanders the rooms again, getting a better feel for the layout of the prison. He stands in the dark, massive, empty cell block. The doors are open to all these vacant cells, and winds up back in the warden's office again, where he discovers drawers that are just filled with documents of prisoners and such.
This sounds like a ghost story, that's like a ghost movie that's
well,
happening.
Well, we will see in a minute.
Oh, God.
But before starting his read, he realizes, you know, oh, I'm hungry and I didn't bring any provisions. So he heads out from the prison and to the nearest convenience store that are miles away. And while he's paying for some food, he eyes the big liquor shelves that are nearby.
Oh,
as if they're slowly calling out to him. And the clerk says, will that be all? And after a long pause, Jack says, no, that'll be it. So that night, Jack sifts through folders of prisoners while pounding down a Twinkie instead of a Jack Daniels, and
sure.
pauses when he gets to a name in one of the files, and it's Andy Dufresne.
Okay.
Finally, it's a name that he recognizes and is going to help kickstart his research. when suddenly, while reading this, a noise is heard out in the cell block area.
Okay.
And Jack slowly walks out of the warden's office and stares into the long, dark hallway leading to the cell block door. And at that moment, we hear a metal groan, followed by a collective slam.
Okay.
He grabs a flashlight and bursts through the doors to the cells, calling out, "Who's there?" And his flashlight, he sees that now all the cell doors are suddenly all closed.
Okay.
He's stunned. He stands there speechless, and we begin to hear a choir of whispers calling out to him in the darkness, taunting. Fish, 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 fish.
Oh.
Fish.
Yeah, I get it.
It grows louder and louder until suddenly the door below flies open, and a dark figure in the shape of a guard marches into the room and looks right up at Jack. Jack races down the hall back to the warden's office and slams the door shut.
It's Satan. Come fresh off his spaceship.
Yes, M. Night Shyamalan has ties to this movie, too.
Yeah.
How are we still bringing up Devil in the middle of...
Oh, no. Oh, no. I can't stop.
Oh, so anyway, the very next...
I promise. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with Devil.
I don't believe you.
I don't believe me either.
So anyway, so the very next morning, Jack wakes up at the desk. Documents are spread everywhere. We're seeing familiar faces on the files. There's Red, Haywood, Old Brooks, Warden Norton, and Captain Hadley.
Yeah.
And Jack picks up a folder labeled Brooks. And he thinks, okay, I'm going to start here.
Okay.
And takes it down to the library that literally has his name on it now. Jack's wandering the rows and rows of books. They're collecting dust when he hears the call of a raven behind him. And he sees this raven looking at him. He says, "How'd you get in here?" When a voice behind him suddenly says, "Oh, don't mind Jake." Jack spins around there, and there is Old Man Brooks leafing through a dusty book, actually standing there.
Oh, shit.
Jack's like, who are you? "Name's Brooks. I'm the librarian." That's my best impression of it.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
Jack lifts up the file in his hands, and sure enough, this is Brooks standing right in front of him. And Jack starts a conversation with the apparition and realizes, holy shit, there are ghosts in this prison, and this is actually happening.
It's like a Scooby-Doo episode.
So eventually, Jack goes on to meet many of the apparitions from the original Shawshank movie, befriending them, learning their stories, becoming a part of the prison family. However, he also meets Captain Hadley and Warden Norton.
Oh, okay.
Whose ghostly presence carries with them like an intense amount of dark energy, dark power.
Now, is Captain Hadley the dark figure that we saw before?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So you realize they can actually hurt Jack. They can throw him against the walls. And at one point, they even managed to lock him inside a cell for a night.
Oh, shit.
With a storm beginning to grow louder and louder on the outside. And here is Jack completely trapped in the cell with not a human being around for many miles. And the old caretaker isn't
right
back for, you know, another few days.
Sure. But we haven't... Have we seen Andy or Red yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
So as Jack sits in the cell in total despair, a small object falls at his feet. And picking it up, he squints through the darkness, and in the flashes of lightning, he makes out that it's a small polished chess piece.
Yeah.
And sitting next to him suddenly is the ghost of Andy Dufresne, who says, "It's a simple choice, really. Get busy living, or get busy dying." And vanishes. Jack looks up at the wall and notices that one side is boarded up with just a simple wood board.
Yeah.
And he recalls reading that one cell in particular was never occupied again since the late 60s. And this
right
is why.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's in Andy's cell.
Right.
Not a short time later, this storm is really picking up intensity. There's torrential rain, all this lightning and thunder. And the ghosts of Captain Hadley and Warden Norton are returning to the cell. And they discover that Jack has indeed vanished.
"Man up and vanished like a fart in the wind."
And suddenly, behind them, Jack swings down from the upper landing and slams the door on them, locking the door inside. And at this point, Jack is maniacally, like, laughing in victory, thinking, okay, I just bested the two ghosts. They're actually physically trapped behind this door because that's how ghosts work in this world.
Okay.
But as they grab the bars, they glare at him with this really scary, intense gaze. And all this energy and wind begins to grow, and the cell doors all start rattling, and doors are slamming open and shut as their evil powers are growing more and more intense.
Okay.
So Jack runs away, like, calling for somebody, anybody, Brooks, Andy, like, help me. And standing at the entrance of the library is Red.
Yeah.
And he's smoking a cigarette, one of his lucky strikes that he has.
Yeah.
He hands it to Jack, and Jack picks up the cigarette, looks at the rows of books, flicks a cigarette into the library, and it immediately goes ablaze like you do in Hollywood movies.
Right, yeah.
The fire spreads throughout the prison, and Jack races to get out of the doors and runs out into the torrential rainstorm. And he turns around behind him to watch the prison completely being destroyed by fire and killing the evil spirits within.
Okay.
And of course, he raises his arms like Andy Dufresne does on all of the movie posters.
Yeah.
And suddenly, right, we cut to a hard black. Jack opens his eyes slowly and looks at the morning sky, and there's a dark figure standing over him. The figure reaches down, and a bright light emerges. It's an EMT who is checking for his vitals.
Okay.
So as he's placed onto the gurney, a local detective interrogates him about what the hell he was doing at Shawshank. And Jack explains about his book, his research, and the detective asks, "You mind explaining this?" And it holds up a garbage bag filled with empty booze bottles.
Oh.
Jack, of course, is speechless, and the detective pulls out a tablet showing him security camera footage of Jack at the convenience store where, after he paused, actually bought nearly half the bottles of hard liquor.
Oh.
And as Jack is wheeled out, he keeps asking about the caretaker who let him stay there. He's like, "Where is old man Haywood?" And the detective looks at him in confusion and reveals, "There is no caretaker."
Right.
"How you got in here in the first place is something we want to know from you."
Right.
And as Jack is loaded into the ambulance, he looks up and sees at the highest window, shattered from the fire he started, the faintest image of old Haywood, the caretaker, waving him goodbye.
Oh, shit.
And that is my film, which is titled The Shawshank Legacy.
Oh, damn. So my movie takes place 10 years after the events of the first film. So that puts it at, what, 77?
Yeah, roughly around, Angie breaks out in 66 and Red is paroled in 67. So, yeah, this would be 1977. Sweet.
Yeah. So it picks up in Mexico with Andy. And we can see that Andy has sort of come into his own there in the city that he lives in, where he has this, like, financial advising company that he's started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to kind of go along with his talents from the first movie. Red's there with him, sort of helping the best he can in the office. We learn very quickly from another customer that comes in that tries to get Andy to do business with them, but Andy ultimately turns them down, and we find out through the course of that conversation that the person that came in to talk to Andy is actually a member of a drug cartel.
Oh, no.
And Andy's really good at what he does, and the cartel and stuff in the area knows this, and they're trying to get him to help, you know, fudge their books or do make them more money, but it's all illegal, and Andy is very against doing anything illegal at this point. You know, it's like a second chance. He doesn't want to, and that's not doing all that great, because with Andy refusing to take any illegal jobs and there not being a whole lot of normal jobs, they're falling on financial difficulties. And at the restaurant, we find out, okay, they don't have too much time before they're essentially bankrupt and they have to shut the business down that they've started. So they talk very briefly at dinner about the prison, about Shawshank.
Right.
And somebody overhears them talking and approaches them after the dinner, after they're leaving, and says, "Hey, couldn't help but overhear, you know, you're talking about prison. Have you done time?" And Andy's like, this is just some stranger. He's not going to tell him anything, really. But he presses him a little bit, and he finally gets him to admit that, yeah, he's been in prison before. And he says, "I might have a job for you." And Andy's like, "Oh, fuck, you know, not again.
Another cartel."
Yeah, all these people. And he's like, "No, it's nothing big." He says, "There's some friends of mine in, like, a prison, like a very minimum security sort of holding center, a couple miles away from here.
You got to break him out."
Well, and that's it exactly.
Oh, he says, kidding. No, he's
not. Andy has to break them out, but he says, "We're going to break them out. And if you've gotten out of prison, which, you know, he overhears them talking about it at dinner, help us break these people out and we'll make it worth your while. And he offers them a shitload of money to do it.
Here's what you do. Find the nearest pipe filled with poop and then crawl through it.
Yeah, and then crawl through it. So Andy at first turns him down, but takes like a card from him, essentially. And he says, well, if you change your mind, here's this. And he talks to Red about it afterwards. And Red advises him, no, you know, you don't go down this road. And he's like, it's just an advising thing. They're offering a lot of money. With the money that they're offering, we could be in business for like another 5 years easy.
Oh, yeah.
But Red doesn't trust him. Well, he ultimately calls the guy back and accepts the job. Huh. And goes to meet him and a couple of his other friends, and they're kind of going over the layout of the prison looks like and everything. But ultimately, it's decided we have to go see it in order to get a better idea, because they don't have like blueprints of it or anything.
Right. So they have to familiarize themselves with the layout of the entire prison.
Yeah, and Andy is a little hesitant about committing this much to it.
Yeah,
but he goes out with them. They jump into a vehicle and they start driving. It's like 5 miles or so away from the city, and they start heading out, and they leave the town, and then they pull over off into like the side of the road, and it's just, there's like nothing as far as the eye can see. It's just desert basically.
Ooh,
and they pull over, and he's like, why are we stopped? You know, what's the deal? What's going on? And then some other cars pull up.
Oh shit.
And stop. And you can see on the side of the car, it says US Border Patrol.
Oh no. It's a trap.
Yeah. And Andy looks to the guy and he's like, basically, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And these uniformed officers basically get out and arrest him because this guy and this group, maybe cartel, we don't know.
Man.
Red didn't go with him, by the way, because Red was,
I was gonna say,
very against the whole thing. So they take Andy in the back seat of this police-looking vehicle and then take him to an airfield.
Huh.
And as he's kind of questioning, as they pull up and they stop next to like this almost puddle jumper-looking plane, the door opens and they like hit him in the head with a gun or something and knock him out.
Oh, shit.
And now this is movie unconscious, so he's unconscious for a
while.
Oh,
yeah, you know, just a simple concussion with no side effects whatsoever. You know, the typical Hollywood knockout punch.
But when he wakes up and he comes to, like, blurry vision, looks around, and he's in a cell.
Oh.
He's in his cell.
Oh, no. Oh, fuck.
He's in his cell at Shawshank. And it's interesting that in your pitch, Shawshank was closed down, because it's also closed down in mine, and it has been for a while.
Oh, snap.
Ever since the warden, Warden Norton
yeah.
Got that whole corruption at Shawshank and everything, they just closed the whole prison down.
Wow.
And it's been that way for years. And it kind of looks like it. Mine's not nearly as kept up as yours has.
Well, your movie doesn't have a team of ghostly janitors keeping up the place. So.
No. Somebody approaches the cell when Andy wakes up. When he first walks up, Andy's still like blurry-eyed and like concussed, you know, for having been unconscious, basically flying from Mexico to Maine.
That is a long trip to be knocked out.
Yeah.
That's a long knockout punch.
It doesn't make any sense at all, but
sure,
it's fine. Who approaches the cell but Warden Norton?
What?
Yeah, and at first, Andy has the same reaction, but then as his vision clears, it's not Norton.
Huh.
It's somebody that looks like him.
Hmm.
And when the guy starts to talk, he says, "Welcome back to Shawshank, Andy. You need to pay for your crimes against my family."
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
Or something like that. And we find out that the man that approaches the cell is Norton's brother.
Of course.
Who is upset and has been trying to hunt Andy down this whole time, like the past 10 years, to try to get him, like pay him back essentially for what happened, you know, 10 years ago. And so he's brought him back to Shawshank. He has a couple of, like, guards, people that he's paid essentially to be there with him, but it's just them in the prison, you know, it's a shut down prison and everything. So while it looked like he was getting arrested by Border Patrol, they were actually just cronies of this guy, and so the US doesn't know he's here, basically.
don't know why I imagine his cronies signing up for it. They were like, can we keep the uniforms after we're done?
Right. Yeah. So he's captured in his cell, even with the still gaping hole in the wall. But, you know, it's more the symbolism, I guess, for that this guy was doing. But now here's the problem. I don't have an ending for this.
Uh-huh.
So he's captured in his cell at Shawshank. But yeah, that's as far as I've gotten, which I am a little embarrassed to admit. I had a lot of trouble with this one.
Well, it's hard to do to pitch a sequel to The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. Well, and the point is, I thought maybe we could try something a little different.
Okay.
And if you had, maybe getting into our producer notes here a little early, give me a producer note that if a producer was to come and want to alter the entire ending, which, you know, has happened.
Yes. Okay, well, this is a perfect time then to transition to our producer's notes segment.
I can tell you my title is just going to be Shawshank.
Gotcha.
Just going with the classic Hollywood sequel naming convention of...
Oh, yeah. Lose the in the title. Yeah. And
I just call it Shawshank.
Okay. I will now be the producer and provide Richard a couple of notes, the first one having to do with the ending.
Yes.
So clearly we have to get Morgan Freeman involved again because...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But what this movie definitely needs is a specific directorial style, because where Frank Darabont did it in such a like real but emotional, almost Spielbergian way,
mm-hmm.
we need to hire a director that's going to kick the sequel into high gear. So
yeah,
John Woo is going to direct your movie Shawshank.
Oh, no.
And what we have is Red is going to have to break into that prison with the cartels. Directed by John Woo, go.
Yes, I know exactly what to do. After waking up in the cell, Norton's brother and his, like, it was originally, like, three mercenaries that he had with him, and now it's maybe three dozen.
And, yeah, higher, you know, body count.
Yeah, exactly. And they all have, like, an assortment of guns and weapons and just a ludicrous number for... getting Andy.
Of course.
And so they drag him up to the office, to Norton's office, where the blood is even still dried, like on the back wall, because this place shut down quickly and never was like cleaned or anything.
Gotcha.
His brother walks over to the desk and picks a revolver up off of it. Oh. And we can see it's the exact same revolver that Norton had used on himself. And he said, "I hope you've had a good decade, Mr. Dufresne. My only regret is that you're going to get to see my brother before I do."
Oh, that's great.
And he makes Andy sit in the chair.
Oh,
and he's
yes.
like, and he's going to shoot him. And this guy has the bodyguards or has some of his mercenaries in the room with him. And as Andy's sitting there with his, you know, back to the chair with the big window behind him and everything, the window just boom, shatters in, as you can see, like, two people, maybe one of them is like the cartel member that we saw in the beginning, just flies through the window in slow motion as like the room just fills with doves. As they come swinging through the window, like rappelling in, just firing their machine guns and pistols at
is the cartel guy played by Danny Trejo? Because I feel like he has to be.
Yes. He's every cartel member.
It, you know. It's all just clones of Danny Trejo.
They just clone him. And then as Norton's brother turns around and he runs out the door before, you know, he can get attacked, the mercenaries in the room are dispatched quickly. And Andy,
but in,
you know,
slow motion.
Yeah. Andy kind of sitting there in shock. Is like, "Wait, what are you doing here?" And then the one guy points out the window to where you can see in that little round drive, you see Red standing down there, give like a quick salute.
Shawshank Redemption, Red of the Soldado.
Yeah. And you can hear gunfire and other bangs start, you know, coming through Shawshank. And as they go out into the balcony area, you can see the front door, like, blast inwards and, like, breaching, you know, SWAT breaching style as more cartel members start coming in, like, full body armor. And all slow motion and everything, is one guy walks in and does like a roundhouse kick to one of the other mercenaries, because, you know, it's John Woo. And you can see with him an older Haywood.
Oh.
That comes in with them. He's like, "Hey, Andy, what's up?" And then they kill all the bad guys.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that they brought John Woo in for this movie, because
it certainly a genre shift as when we hit the third act.
So with all this in mind, all this John Woo crazy action shit, our production team also thinks, you know, maybe the first Shawshank was pretty heavy-handed, and, you know, a lot of this action violence is pretty heavy-handed as well, and so is the subject of drug cartels. You need to work in a constant character that is just pure comedic relief.
So this movie's Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar is a key to all this.
Yeah, we need to find the find the Rob Schneider of this movie.
There's no way I could put Rob Schneider in it without it being horribly racist. That's the problem. Yeah,
that is a problem. Rob,
I have an idea. All right, so there are two cartel members that come to Andy frequently throughout the movie, trying to get, you know, his business.
Right.
One of them is Danny Trejo,
of course,
and the other one is Gabriel Iglesias.
Oh wow!
And maybe the head of the cartel. Okay, how about this? Danny Trejo has to be the head of the cartel.
Oh, definitely.
Like in charge of it, and then maybe the other guy that he talks to is Gabriel Iglesias and Benicio del Toro.
Oh, okay. Fresh off Sicario 2.
This is actually a prequel to Sicario 2. He's like, "Hey, do you remember that time that we went to the 70s and busted up Shawshank Prison while doves flew everywhere?"
And then Gabriel Iglesias ends up becoming a security guard to an elevator that was infested with Satan.
Oh, God, no.
I had to bring in Devil back into this somehow.
Anyway, now it's my turn.
Yep.
So, in order to increase box office returns,
of course,
we need cameos from all of the living Ghostbusters.
Also
Rick Moranis.
Well, Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters 2 was made a Ghostbuster.
Mm-hmm.
We had to pull him out of retirement. So as Jack runs outside in the torrential rainstorm and sees Shawshank just burning it to the ground and the screams of all these evil spirits, out of nowhere, a giant form of Warden Norton, like this giant ghost apparition.
Oh, God.
Emerges out of the flames.
Fuck you, Jack.
Whatever he's going to say. And to that moment, you hear a voice behind him say, "No one burns a prison down in my town."
Oh, God.
And there's Bill Murray with Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson and Rick Moranis charging out their proton packs and fire at Warden Norton.
I just wanted a cameo of the actors, but we're going full, like, Ghostbusters.
Full Ghostbusters, okay. Yes. The Shawshank Legacy was actually a crossover transition to the new Ghostbusters cinematic universe.
Oh, God. What have I done? Okay, so Stephen King has had an awful lot of movies.
He's also had an awful lot of awful movies.
Yeah, that's very true.
And have you ever seen The Langoliers? Oh.
I haven't, actually. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because what I need for you to do now, with everything being all about cinematic universes, and we've touched on that one before. I'm not going to go full into make a Shawshank cinematic universe, but
A King cinematic universe? A KCU,
Something like that. I need you to do a crossover where you mix Shawshank Legacy with three Stephen King movies, of which I will name for you.
Oh, God.
It.
Okay.
Langoliers.
Oh, no.
And I wasn't going to do it until you mentioned it. So
I did this to myself, eh?
Yeah. And then the third one is The Mist.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back to where my Ghostbusters spinoff began. So Jack is racing out of the prison; it's on fire, and races outside to the rain and looks back, and he sees the fire is going. All of a sudden, the fire just comes to a just kind of stops, and what emerges is the steam that eventually starts to form into a sort of mist.
Yeah,
that slowly starts to enwrap the prison.
Okay,
and he looks behind him. more mist is headed towards him, so he has no choice but to run back inside. He closes the door and hears all sorts of crazy noises happening outside.
Okay.
Through the wooden door, there's like kind of these dents that are coming through, and he notices what's coming through is like these crazy rows of teeth, and that they're just eating away at this door. And then before he can run away, he notices what looks like this floating ball sack with teeth. Yeah. And it's a langolier. He runs back and thinks, okay, I gotta get the hell away from whatever this thing is, and goes back through Andy Dufresne's cell. He runs, he shuts the door, and he starts to crawl through,
the
hallway. Thinks, I gotta get the hell out of here, and climbs down, finds where the big shit pipe is, takes a rock, smashes it open, sticks his head in, and then is it.
We all float down here.
We all poop down here.
Oh, and, God.
And, oh, man, I don't know where it could go from there.
Yeah,
I
then, think he gets stabbed and dies, probably. No.
So pretty much, so as it starts to eat him, the mist breaks through the window and the Langoliers come and just erase everything. And that's our Stephen
King. Thought you were going to say maybe that's when he wakes up and it was all like a drunken stupor or something.
So, yeah, he wakes up. He's not even in Shawshank. He wakes up on his own bed and notices he's just covered with Stephen King books.
Oh, no. And then he looks straight at the camera and just shrugs. And then it cuts to credits. So as a producer, I need you to have Jack get into an elevator that...
No, we're not. Fuck you. We are not doing this again. How did I know that was coming?
I should really watch that movie again.
So those were our pitches for The Shawshank Redemption. We have my Shawshank Legacy and Richard's Shawshank.
Yeah.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SequelBait, BATE, because we're children.
Yes.
And vote on which movie you would like to see in the theater.
Yes.
Now for the upcoming episode, we're doing something a little special, and we're considering doing this every fifth episode, where we will, instead of pitching a sequel, we'll pitch a reboot, because let's face it, they're rebooting, they're remaking everything. And they always find a way to screw it up somehow.
Sure.
So,
still in the same similar vein as how we've been doing sequel bait, but just with rebooting a pre-existing movie instead of coming up with a sequel.
Exactly. And our first reboot film on the next podcast will be Home Alone.
Yes. I'm ready.
Oh, I'm so ready for this.
So, Kevin gets trapped in an elevator.
Oh, no, and... no. Although you could pitch that if you really want to.
No.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye. Bye.
This is the most unprofessional set I have ever been on!